Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. This hour, open forums. If you've been waiting for your open forum hour, well, it has arrived.
Sounded like you said a plural there, open forums hour.
Did it sound like I said that?
Yeah.
Did I say that?
So it's time to get your open forums right here.
For sale, we've got plenty of open forums.
Yeah. Just for you.
Yeah.
And they're absolutely free.
Look at the mob forming outside to get their free open forums. The forums are actually quite expensive, like the Roman Forum.
I don't think it's for sale.
No, it's
an archaeological monument, World Heritage Site, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure, pretty sure it is. Our number 888-318-7884. If you have any question about the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church, maybe a moral question, philosophical question, we are happy to answer those. You don't have to be Catholic to call. 888-318-7884. Our guest, you've already heard his voice, is Jimmy Akins, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and the author of A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist.
And that one's not plural. That one's singular, just Jimmy Akin. No,
I didn't
S.
say Akins.
No, but a lot of people want to add an S there, and there ain't one.
Isn't there a...
There's no S anywhere in my first, middle, or last name. None.
How do you spell Sam without Akin?
Middle name is not Sam.
Oh, it's not? No. All right. There must be another Jimmy Akin I was thinking of. I was going to say there was a country music guitarist named
Bluegrass.
Akin.
There's a bluegrass guitarist actually named Jimmy Akin. He was in the Bluegrass Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay. So I must have him. I think in my mind I confused that with Chet Atkins,
right,
who has an S.
Or Clay Akin, who has an I and an E.
No, that's wrong.
Well, it's not,
on,
it is if it's my name.
Come on, Clay.
Mine is as simple as it can be, just four letters, A-K-I-N, just like it sounds.
I feel like I have something to follow up on that, but I can't think of it. 888-318-7884, the number. Whole bunch of callers on the line already.
Ooh, Jimmy, let's do them.
We made them wait a bit because we did a wonderful show with Dr. Christopher Kaiser just now. But
awesome.
But they are awaiting. So let's go to Scott in Carlton, Virginia. Scott, your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hi there, Jimmy.
Howdy.
So I got a question. I got a question about the teaching of outside the church there is no salvation.
Right.
And I got spawned by this whole myth conversation from the last hour.
Okay, I didn't hear that, but I'll do what I can.
Yeah. So people will either take it to the extreme of universalist, everyone gets to heaven, or the other side of exclusivist. If you're not, baptized and confirmed in the Catholic Church, you can't be saved. How do you try and explain that in that context?
How do I explain what?
How do you explain that outside the church there is no salvation is a valid teaching without leading to a universalist mindset?
Okay. Well, the church's understanding is that God is free and sovereign in terms of who he grants salvation to, and he is perfectly within his rights to set certain conditions on obtaining salvation. And in the ordinary course of affairs, in order to obtain salvation, one needs to repent of one's sins, have faith in Christ, and be baptized into Christ's church. And that's the Catholic Church. However, there are special situations. God is also – he's the one who sets the criteria. So he's able to waive the criteria as well. And so God, being a just and loving God, he wants people to come into the fullness of the truth. He wants people to come into his church where he can give them the fullness of grace. But he also knows if someone is not in his church through no fault of their own. Some people are raised, like I was raised with basically no knowledge of Catholics. I was raised in a very non-Catholic area. And so I only had a dim awareness. And certainly as a child, I had no opportunity to join the Catholic Church. And so for people who are not part of the Catholic Church through no fault of their own, God is able to take account of that and say, well, I'm not going to hold them to that requirement. I'm still going to hold them to the requirements that they are able to fulfill, like having faith in Jesus Christ. If you're in a culture, you know, for example, that has exposed you to the gospel and evidence for the gospel, repenting of sin, things like that, being baptized. If you know that's something you should do, then you're going to be responsible for seeing to having it done. And so God will hold you accountable for whatever you are able to do reasonably based on the opportunities you have and the evidence you've seen. But he's not going to hold you accountable for things that you haven't done through no fault of your own. So if you have missed one of the requirements or ordinary requirements for salvation through no fault of your own, he's not going to hold you accountable for that. But if you've missed one of the requirements for salvation and it is your fault, then you will be held accountable for that. So the former, the fact he'll excuse you from things that are not your fault, is why this doesn't lead to exclusivism. And the latter, the fact he'll hold you accountable for things that are your fault, is why it doesn't lead to universalism.
George, thank you very much. Or excuse me, Scott, thank you very much for getting us started. I do appreciate it. 888-318-7884, the number. Let's go to Margaret in Eugene, Oregon. Margaret, you are on with Jimmy Akin. Your question, please.
Hi, Jimmy. I was wondering, I'm 18, and as a 15-year-old, I started getting more into my faith and reading more. And one of the things that I had trouble with, like, I become really scrupulous the more and more I, like, get into my faith. And I was wondering if there was any, like, techniques you would offer, like, before confession or before Holy Communion where I don't get so scrupulous, because there's been times where, like, right after confession, like, I like can't go up to communion because I like won't feel worthy or something. So I'll like go back to confession like right then. So if there's any advice you can give me, that'd be great.
Yeah, let me ask you a couple of questions. First, though, a general piece of information that is of consolation to a lot of people. Almost everybody in their life goes through periods where they're scrupulous if they take their religion seriously. It's just, you know, a sort of an occupational hazard, so to speak, in finding the right balance between, you know, wanting to attend carefully to one's moral responsibilities while not being overly rigorous about it. That's a delicate balance to strike. And at various points in our lives, it's normal for people to kind of veer in one direction or another, either becoming too scrupulous or too lax. And ultimately, as you grow in maturity in your spiritual life, as all of us do over the course of time, it becomes easier to strike that balance. But I do have a couple of questions. So first one, have a lot of people who are scrupulous have a condition known as obsessive compulsive disorder. This condition affects about 2 or 3% of the population, and it can make scrupulosity more intense. And there are some special things that people with OCD need to do in order to combat their scrupulosity. By any chance, have you ever been diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder or another anxiety condition like that?
I've never been diagnosed with it, but I feel like some of the same symptoms, like if I'll be driving, I'll be worried about, like, oh, did I hit this biker on the road, even though I haven't seen them. So that could be a possible thing to it.
Right.
And some family members, have said, like, well, maybe this isn't, it's like a OCD issue as well as religious issue. So that's possible. Yes.
Okay. The other question I had is, when you say you've had to go back to confession quickly before going to communion because you didn't feel worthy to receive communion, does that mean that you have felt you committed a new sin that you needed to confess, or just that an emotional feeling of I'm not worthy?
Both, and like on different times.
Okay.
So
let me give you some basic advice. The first thing is, there's an organization called Scrupulous Anonymous that you can check out. They have a newsletter that was published, and I'm not sure if it still is, but it was initially published by Liguri Press. And so I would suggest checking out Scrupulous Anonymous. You can just Google that. It's a Catholic organization designed to help people with scrupulosity. There's also a book called Understanding Scrupulosity that came out a few years ago. You might want to check that out. I know we used to carry that here at Catholic Answers. If you think you may have obsessive compulsive disorder, you know, at some point, it's if you don't find the scrupulosity getting better, or if you find that the symptoms you have that seem like they might be OCD, if those get worse, then you may want to have that checked out, because there are things that can be done in the mental health industry to help combat obsessive compulsive disorder. It's, you know, for some people, an ongoing struggle, but there are various drugs that can help, and also a technique known as cognitive behavioral therapy has apparently shown a lot of promise in helping people with obsessive compulsive disorder. So if you do have OCD, just the ordinary scrupulous techniques may not be of full benefit, and you may want to use some anti-OCD techniques as a way of helping further knock the scrupulosity down. In terms of the confession communion issue, if you just have an emotional feeling of unworthiness, the thing to do is put that aside. None of us are worthy to receive our Lord. It's always a grace, but it's His will to give us that grace anyway. So if you're otherwise qualified to receive communion and it's just an emotional feeling of unworthiness, put that feeling aside, relax, and know that God loves you, and don't worry about your personal worthiness. If, on the other hand, you think you've committed a new sin after going to confession, then that does sound like scrupulosity and possibly even obsessive compulsive disorder. And the thing to do in that case is apply the standard test that spiritual directors have been giving for hundreds of years. If you are of scrupulous conscience and you have any doubt whether you've committed a mortal sin, assume that you didn't. So only go back to confession if you know for a fact you've committed a mortal sin. If it was just some feeling that passed over you, or something you started to do and then pulled back from, you didn't give it full consent, it's not a mortal sin, it's just your scrupulosity or your OCD trying to torture you. So ignore that and only go back to confession or refrain from receiving communion if you know for a fact it was a mortal sin.
Okay, Margaret?
Okay. Yeah, and I'm wondering, like, can it be like a, like, can the devil, like, kind of be attacking you? Because when I went back to confession, the priest was like, okay, you're being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it a spiritual thing also?
It's possible. I tend not to focus on that when I advise people on this question, because there are three sources, classically, of temptations: the world, the flesh, and the devil. The devil is only one of those three. In addition, there's the world, which is our cultural influences, and there's the flesh, which is just our own inbuilt temptations and desires. And we don't want to give the devil too much credit. It's possible the devil could be playing a role here, but, you know, even if he is, so what? Just pray to God and trust God, and don't let your scrupulosity or your OCD get worked up about, is the devil involved here? Whether he's involved or not, just trust God and don't worry about the exact series of causes leading to the current situation. Just trust God. He loves you and He'll take care of you.
Margaret, thank you so much for that call. We really do appreciate it. We have to go to a break, however, and so we will do that. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more Jimmy Akin Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Catholic Answers Live with Jimmy Akin is coming right back.
Catholic Answers is doing it again. We're holding our fifth annual Apologetics Conference this September in beautiful San Diego, California, and we'd like to see you there.
We've had a wonderful time going home all enthused.
Every time we come here, it's just an incredible experience.
Normally, you'd have to root through a dozen different books to get half the stuff I've learned here.
These guys are so amazing. I always get so much, learn so much. I've already signed up for next year.
Join us this September 27th to the 30th for a lively and inspiring conference with an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to jumpstart your faith. All of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and special keynote speaker, Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke.
I enjoy the atmosphere and the friendliness of the people, and I'm having a great time.
I love it. I love it. I'm so glad I came here.
I've just learned so much. You know, I've been a Catholic all my life. It's just been so wonderful.
I love it. I want to come back every year.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book that you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. This Lent, plant seeds of faith in the hearts and minds of your non-Catholic friends and family. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today. You can order your copies of Why We're Catholic by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Jimmy Akin is our guest. Our topic, whatever's on your mind having to do with the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church. Maybe you got a moral question. Maybe you got a philosophical problem. Maybe there's someone in your life who wants to understand one of the difficult dogmas or doctrines of the Church, and you need some help answering that question. 888-318-7884 is our number. 888-31-TRUTH. And we are joined, Jimmy and I are joined in studio by just one of the finest people you will ever meet, Erica Olsen. I love having Nordic people come in, Erica.
Norwegian, yeah.
We laugh because that's her married good. Name.
Maiden name
that's
Sanchez.
Good.
Yeah. And you were, but you were baptized as Sanchez.
You guys are terrible.
What?
Why? I was baptized Santana.
Oh, that's right. That's
you
right.
Messed me up, Jimmy Akin. Oh. I probably would have done the same.
That's okay.
Sorry. No, it's Emily.
Emily is guitar Sanchez. Family. But that's okay because everyone I've known my whole life has always confused it with Sanchez. So
really?
So when even before I worked here.
When did you learn to start playing the guitar?
Oh, from my childhood.
Okay, no, that's Irish.
I don't know.
That's kind of Irish.
What is Nordic? What do Nordic people sound like? I have no idea.
Oh, if you want to do a more kind of Scandinavian accent, like influence in Minnesota, you want to do it more like this?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're still more Irish. But,
okay.
But there's a reason why you're here.
I am. Just there so is
that
a we reason.
Know. Not just to
not
discuss
to
the fact that your married
origins.
Name is Nordic.
Yes.
And your unmarried name or your... What maiden name?
It's
sorry,
Latin.
I forget.
Latino.
Is Sanchez. Just kidding. Sorry. You're here to talk about the thing that you spend the year planning.
The year, yes.
Yeah.
The majority of my time is spent on this. I slave away. I sweat blood and tears on this thing for everyone out there.
Well, you'll wipe it off first, right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
But I am here to tell you all about the Catholic Answers Conference that's coming up in September.
September 27th through 30th, right?
Yes.
Here in beautiful La Jolla.
Yes,
the La Jolla part
the Hyatt
of San Diego.
Regency. They have a great room rate for us, and I can't say enough great things about the brand Hyatt Regency. They're amazing. I have to give them a shout out because they've just treated us so nice. They're so welcoming. They welcome all of our guests. I've had so much positive review about this hotel, so you
it
will
was
love
wonderful
it.
Last
it was
year.
So
just
nice.
Wonderful.
And
it's the same place we had last year, so that was a great place.
Yes, it's the same hotel that we were at last year, so if you went last year, please tell your friends and come join us again. Jimmy will be there along with Tim and Trent and Carlo, and then we also have Cardinal Burke coming.
Yeah.
Raymond Burke, and we have Stacy Trisankos joining us and Father Ehrman, and our subject is Faith and Science. It's going to be an awesome topic. I...
Yeah, that's a cool one.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this. Stacy sent me an email on what her subject was going to be about, what her talk was going to be about, and it just made me so excited for the whole conference. Just, I wanted to learn more about what she had to say.
You should get Jimmy as a speaker because he's very a faithful person, but he also knows the periodic table backwards and forwards. And you can start
in literally true. I do know the periodic table backwards and forwards.
And you can even start in the middle.
Go.
And he'll go from there.
Hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon.
This goes on for a while.
It does go on for a while.
If you want to know more, come to the conference.
Special early bird pricing is happening now through July 2nd. Get your tickets soon. Seats are limited, going fast. Daily parking is only $8 there at the Hyatt with in-and-out privileges. Full conference ticket includes banquet dinner with keynote address by Cardinal Burke. And the special room rate is $149 per night.
And the best thing to come.
I'm giving my talk on science and scripture, which is a thing a lot of people have questions about. So I'm looking forward to doing that. And,
But tell everybody the
real reason to come.
The real reason to come is this, because we have a great surprise for you guys.
People know that I am active in the dance community and that I call multiple different forms of dance. And I am able to take people who've never danced before and get them dancing in 30 seconds. And so I'm going to be calling a square dance for the attendees of this year's conference.
I cannot wait to see Cardinal Burke square dancing.
It's going to be
I'm really looking forward to it. That's not happening? Oh, sorry.
Well, hey, don't eliminate it.
Jimmy said he can get anybody to dance in 30 seconds.
All right, CatholicAnswersConference.com is where you go. Go to CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Go-go? And is that another? You're going to have go-go dancing too?
No. Okay. We are definitely not having go-go dancing.
Not that kind.
We don't know. We don't have any word yet on whether there will be a Catholic Answers cookie there. We have, or we do know there won't be a Catholic Answers cookie.
I don't know yet. We'll have something special. Not sure what yet.
All right. In addition to the square dancing and all the
great
talks.
My puppy is making an appearance.
Hey.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. The Hyatt is a pet-friendly brand. So they actually, the people that I work with at the Hyatt have also already requested that I bring him. So he will be making an appearance. He's a four-month-old bloodhound puppy. So he'll be making.
Named Rogue.
Named Rogue Stout. He's named after a beer. That's right. And he will be joining us at the conference.
Erica Olson.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming in and talking with us. CatholicAnswersConference.com is the place to go. CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Sign up today.
What?
Sign up today.
Yeah. Thanks, Erica. All right. Back to callers we go. Let's go to Ann in Cincinnati, Ohio. Ann, you are on with Jimmy Akin. Your question, please.
Good evening, gentlemen. Recently, I tried to answer my niece's question and encountered a religious argument.
Okay.
I insisted that the initials B.C., as used in literature, refer to before Christ.
Yep.
But that B.C.E. is a recent attempt to deny Christ. Is that true?
No.
How recent is B.C.E.?
Okay, so B.C.E. has come up in just the last few decades. I don't know exactly when that came into use, but it's been within the last few decades. What B.C.E. stands for is before the common era. Before Christ stands for before Christ. B.C.E., which is the same epoch, so just like B.C. ends in the year 1 B.C., B.C.E. also ends in the year 1 B.C. So it's referring to the same range of years, but it stands for before the common era. And the reason for that is not to deny Christ, but to include other people who don't recognize Christ as the Messiah, or who I should say, who don't recognize Jesus as the Christ. Mm-hmm. So this would include, for example, non-Jewish Christians, or Muslims, or Hindus, or people all over the world who are of some other religion or no religion. And it's a way to try to include them. Now, I'm not saying I think this is the world's best idea. In fact, I've known atheists who have, you know, said, come on, it's just before Christ. You know,
yeah.
Don't worry about it beyond that. Whether you believe in him personally or not is a different issue. But we don't have to get all politically correcty on these terms and get rid of the classical terms. However, that's the intent. The intent is to be inclusive and not make people who are non-Christian feel excluded or like second-class citizens or whatever. So the goal is not to deny Christ, but to include other people. That's why they call it the common era. because it's common to people of all faiths. That's the idea anyway. Now, whether the logic really holds up there and whether this is really a good idea, that's another subject. But the basic intent is to be nice to people and not to diss Christianity.
What do you make of that, Anne?
Thank you. Thank you. I have to apologize to my sister.
No problem. It's honest mistake.
Well, she has to forgive you, too, though. You can inform her of that. So BCE.
Be
what's
nice
the,
about it.
What's the other one then?
So, CE instead of AD Anno Domini, the year of our Lord.
Right.
CE, common era.
Okay. I thought I had the suspicion that BCE was just a really happy version, like before Christ, everybody like that, that it was like really in.
Uh-huh.
No?
You can define it however you want. We're going to be common or inclusive about this.
But what do you think? Do you think it's one of those ones that will persist? Because some of these things, they don't persist. After a while, they kind of fade.
Yeah, a lot of times they fade. It's hard to introduce deliberate changes into a language, but sometimes they stick.
Yeah.
And this one has gotten picked up in the scholarly literature. Personally, it's not my fave, but I see it in the scholarly literature a lot. And so this one might stick.
Yep. Jimmy Akin is our guest. Open Forum is our topic. Our number, 888-318-7884. And if you're going to the Religious Ed Conference up in L.A., the Los Angeles Religious Ed Conference, come by and say hello. We'll be at the Catholic Answers booth all day. And then during the show, we'll be step across the way there to the EWTN booth and do the show live from there. Hope to see you. We'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
50 years ago, Blessed Pope Paul VI released his encyclical Humanae Vitae, reaffirming the Catholic Church's condemnation of contraception. Catholic Answers Magazine is marking the anniversary with a very special issue delving deep into what is arguably one of the Church's most controversial documents in modern times. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 818-487-2011 or by going to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. Don't miss out on what will be a virtual handbook on the most important aspects of Paul VI's profound and prophetic document. Don't wait another moment to subscribe. Call 818-487-2011 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into, or back to, the practice of the Catholic faith. This Lent, plant seeds of faith in the hearts and minds of your non-Catholic friends and family. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today. You can order your copies of Why We're Catholic by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This week on EWTN On Location, the 2017 EWTN Catholic Radio Conference comes to EWTN Television featuring Dr. Ray Guarendi, Father Larry Richards, Tompkin and Blaze, the EWTN Choir, Dr. David Anders, EWTN Radio Affiliates, and more. It's an hour of highlights from the Catholic Radio event of the year. Join us for EWTN On Location this Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Television.
Just enjoy it, everybody. Best time of the week. It's groovy music time.
We need still, more of that groovy music.
I know. Come on. You still don't have it on a loop, Nick.
They need to do more than just loop it because it's so short. If they loop it, it would be real. It would be repetitive. They need to do a longer version.
Do an instrumental version.
Yeah.
You guys can do an instrumental. And you know what?
Yeah.
That can be just the theme music for Catholic Answers. Every day, that'll be our new theme music. We'll get rid of the old. Oh, that just
I want to get Darren's approval. I'm on a it could be bumper music.
Darren's not here right now. He's over there. He's not over, listening.
He's talking on his iPhone in his office.
Yeah, so we don't need Darren's approval. Just do it. Make the move. Again, open forum. Jimmy Akin is our guest. 888-318-7884 is our number. We go to George now in Santa Rosa, California. George, I know I made you wait a long time. Thanks for waiting. Your question for Jimmy.
Hello?
Nope. Did I make you wait too long, George? Hello, George?
I'm here just hearing phone crackles.
Yeah.
He may have stepped away from his phone for a second.
Because I made him wait a long time. I'm sorry, George.
No, he's making us wait. It's fair play.
It is. Yeah. Turnabout is fair play. Garen in Anchorage, Alaska, listening on 94.1 FM. You are on with Jimmy Akin. Your question, please.
Yes, thank you. My question is about the church triumphant, Mother Mary and the angels.
Okay.
If they're not omnipresent, how do they hear our prayers?
The common understanding is that they're aware of our prayers through their union with God. Everyone in heaven is in union with God. They have the beatific vision. God can share with them whatever information is relevant to them. And so God, being omniscient, does know our prayers. And therefore, if we're asking someone in heaven to intercede alongside of us, God can let that person know, hey, so-and-so is asking for your prayers too, because that would be information that's relevant to them. They would want to know if someone wants them to pray for them, and God can make them aware of that. There may be other ways, perhaps more direct ways, that they could be aware because we don't know all of the ways that that information works in the afterlife. But we do know that God has all knowledge and God is in union with them and God can tell them whatever is relevant to them. And so we know at least that way exists.
Okay?
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Just a follow-up question.
Uh-huh.
The same with the devil, Satan, and his angels, you know, like the so-called black mass or Ouija board or seances, do they hear those things?
It's not clear. It seems that sometimes magical practices get picked up on by entities in the dark areas of the spiritual world. But like I said earlier, we don't want to give the devil too much credit. And the devil and his angels are not omnipresent or omniscient. And in fact, they're not in union with God either. So God's not necessarily going to be sharing information with them the way he shares it with the saints. So they may actually have significant limitations on the kind of information they can pick up. There's a famous line in the 1968 version of the movie Bedazzled. It stars Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, and Peter Cook is playing the devil, and he's complaining because he says, you know, God is omnipresent and I'm not. I'm just highly mobile.
Garrett, thanks very much for that call and those questions. We do appreciate it. 888-31-TRUTH, our number. Let's go to Eric now in Fargo, North Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio, 1280 AM. Eric, your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hi. Just a little background. I was raised Catholic, but have since joined the Lutheran Church. In my youth, as I became frustrated with the Catholic Church, one of the areas that I found in question was when you read about Jesus and his interaction with the Pharisees, he seems to be fairly critical of the system they had developed of excessive laws, excessive guidelines, and how that was hurting the people. Mm-hmm. And then in studying Catholicism, I began to realize that there are a lot of Catholics, and in the area I grew up in, I would say that in spite of a relatively strong Catholic base, I would say the majority of Catholics who don't even understand a lot of the rules and guidelines within the Catholic faith. And I struggled with the idea that the Catholic Church inadvertently was falling into the same trap as the Pharisees of creating a religious structure that was burdensome to the people. I guess we're just wondering your thoughts on that and that idea. But
okay, Eric.
Well, I know this is kind of a meme that's out there. This has been part of the standard in many parts of the Protestant world, kind of the standard list of charges against the Catholic Church for some time. And it's something that has also found resonance even among non-Christians in recent time. You know, even people who are secular will, you know, sometimes claim, oh, Catholics are so legalistic and guilt-ridden and things like that. But then they do the same thing to Protestant Christians. And they'll say, oh, Protestant Christians in general are just so legalistic and it creates guilt in them and so forth. And so you kind of want to be a little suspicious here of claims like this and say, okay, it's easy to make charges. What's the evidence that there's real substance to these charges? So let's think about what God – just here between us as Christians, let's think about what does God want human beings to do? Well, all human beings have a moral nature, and God wants us to obey laws of morality. That's true of everybody. It's true, and St. Paul talks about this in Romans, for example. You know, he notes how Jewish people have the law in one form, but even the Gentiles, in a sense, have the law of God written in their own hearts, and their consciences will either accuse them or excuse them when they do or don't follow that law written on their hearts. So God has put the moral law on the hearts of everybody, and everybody needs to obey moral rules. What usually happens today when various people, and sometimes it's people of no faith, sometimes it's people who are young and their hormones are kind of going strong and they have certain temptations at that time of life, particularly of a sexual nature, and they'll rebel against their church, either the Catholic Church or a Protestant church or whatever kind of church there may be, saying, oh, it's so legalistic, when what they really mean is it won't let me engage in the kind of sex I want to right now.
Yeah.
And legalism gets used as an excuse for what's really a temptation to violate a moral law. And mm-hmm. any law that you don't want to obey seems burdensome.
Yeah.
But if you step back from those particular situations, we should be able to agree as Christians that everybody needs to follow the moral law. So if there's going to be some kind of legalism, it's not going to involve just moral precepts. It's either going to involve things that are beyond merely moral precepts or an overly harsh, let's say, application of moral precepts.
Right.
Well, so are there people in the Catholic Church – let's take the application first. Are there people in the Catholic Church who apply moral precepts in an overly strict or harsh way?
Yes.
Probably so. Yeah. There are human beings in the Catholic Church. There are also ones who apply them in too lax a way.
Mm-hmm.
Is the same thing true in the Protestant community? Yeah, it is. There are people in the Protestant community who are too strict in their application of various moral principles and who are too lax in their application of various moral principles. So that kind of legalism over stricture is not something that's unique to Catholics. So let's look at that additional category of things that are beyond merely the moral law. We know that in addition to the moral law that is written in human nature and that applies to all human beings, there are also what are sometimes called special precepts or precepts – that's Aquinas's term – precepts that apply to certain people. And examples would be like believers in Jesus. If you're a believer in Jesus, you need to, for example, get baptized. You need to go to church. You need to worship on Sunday. You need to do various things like that, which have come down to us from Christ and the apostles as what part of what St. Paul calls the law of Christ as an alternative to the law of Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And so, well, we can agree that Christians need to do these things that, you know, have been established by the authority of the church, initially by Christ and the apostles, but then he passed down that authority to later generations. So we can then ask the question, this is where we have the most direct comparison to the Pharisees. Does the ordinary Catholic encounter an excessively burdensome number of requirements that the church imposes on them beyond the moral law that applies to everybody? Well, I don't see how you can successfully argue that it does, because the number of requirements that Catholics are actually subject to on a weekly basis, let's say, is pretty minimal.
Yeah.
Go to church.
Yeah.
You know, beyond moral. I mean, don't commit mortal sin. Well, that's a moral one. So what do you need to do on a weekly basis because you're a Catholic specifically? Well, go to Mass and try to rest on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. You know, there aren't any – I mean, now, periodically in your life, you're going to encounter a few additional requirements. If you're getting married, well, you're going to have to do some marriage prep and things like that. If you're getting confirmed, you're going to do some confirmation prep. But that's – those are like once-in-a-life things. They're not ongoing requirements that you have to meet every week. Similarly, you know, if it's Lent – you know, a special time of the year, like or Christmas, you know, there are a few additional things like, okay, 7 Fridays a year you want to abstain from meat and you want to go to church also on December 25th, even if it's in the middle of the week. You know, these are not excessively burdensome things. And there's certainly nothing like the detailed requirements that some in Second Temple era Judaism, like the Pharisees, made for tiny little details about how you regulate various minor aspects of your life. So I understand the concern, and I understand how you know it originates in various people's lives. But if you think about it objectively and with an open mind, I don't see how you can successfully argue that Catholics have a burdensome number of requirements beyond the moral law that just applies to everybody.
That actually brings us to our break. Eric, I hope that that was helpful in addressing your question. We'll take that break. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Hello, my friends. This is Christopher Check, president of Catholic Answers. Did you know that Catholic Answer speakers, including yours truly, travel all over the globe speaking at conferences, parish events, high schools, and colleges? If you would like to bring a Catholic Answer speaker to your neck of the woods, visit CatholicAnswerSpeakers.com. That's CatholicAnswerSpeakers.com. We look forward to seeing you.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Do you enjoy tedious lectures full of facts you'll never use? We didn't think so. That's why we're launching the Council of Trent, Trent Horn's engaging new podcast. Every week, you'll get lively lessons in Catholic teaching, as well as a new conversation roadmap that will help you share your Catholic faith with anyone, anytime, anywhere. Visit TrentHornPodcast.com now to find out how you can subscribe to this exciting new podcast.
God helps those who help themselves. Preach the gospel always. When necessary, use words. Sayings like these are such a part of tradition that we assume they come from the Bible, the saints, or famous Christian writers, even though nobody can seem to place their origin. By sheer repetition, they have acquired a halo of truth. In What the Saints Never Said, Trent Horn takes over 40 of these well-known but actual dubious sayings and attempts to track them to their true source. The result? He finds some that are close to what was really said, many that were misattributed or twisted beyond their original meaning, and more than a few that were just plain made up. By setting the record straight, Trent roots out theological errors that can lead us away from Christian truth and offers authentic quotes from Scripture, saints, and scholars that will draw you closer to that truth. Get your copy of What the Saints Never Said today by calling 1-888-291-8. Visiting the shop at Catholic.com or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Open Forum. Jimmy Akin, our guest, having more fun than we should be allowed to have. We go now to where was I going? Tyler in Hutchison, Minnesota, listening on Catholic.com. Oh, that's cool, listening on Catholic.com. Tyler, your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hello?
Hi, Tyler. Your question?
Hi. So I was just wondering about like what constitutes the sin of gluttony, because I got a little bit confused about that, because I don't remember the exact quote, but in the Catechism, it says that eating for the sake of eating alone is gluttony, but that kind of makes me...
Do you have a paragraph?
That sounds like it means that...
Do you have a paragraph number on that?
Can you tell us where that is in the catechism, Tyler?
I'm sorry, I can't remember the number.
Okay, the only passage that I'm aware of in the catechism that mentions gluttony, and the word gluttony appears only once in the catechism, it's in paragraph 866, where it's discussing vices. And it says vices can be classified according to the virtues they oppose, or also can be linked to the capital sins which Christian experience has distinguished following St. John Cassian and St. Gregory the Great. They are called capital sins or other sins or other vices. They are pride, avarice, envy, wrath, lust, gluttony, and sloth or acedia, or achadia, depending on how you want to pronounce it. The catechism only uses the word gluttony in this one passage, and it doesn't define it. Also, it's talking about gluttony as one of – they're called the seven deadly sins, but they're really not sins. They're sinful tendencies.
Okay.
So just because you have a tendency towards wrath, that doesn't – that's not a sin. That's a tendency that can lead you to sin. And similarly, gluttony understood as a – as one of the seven quote-unquote deadly sins is really a sinful – a tendency that will lead you to sin. The specific sin it'll lead you to is eating in an excessive way. Now, you then get questions about – What is eating in an excessive way? Well, there have been people who have proposed that eating purely for the sake of pleasure without taking anything else into account is going to be sinful. Like, have you had enough? You know, for now there's nothing wrong with eating for pleasure. In fact, biologically, the reason eating is pleasurable is to get you to eat.
Yeah,
that's why not eating is painful. That's why you have hunger. Is to both the pleasure and the pain are motivators that God built into you biologically to get you to eat. So because you need to eat to keep your body running and to keep it healthy and so forth. So eating for pleasure or conversely eating to avoid hunger pains, those are both perfectly fine. But you could say – let's take this as an example. You could say, okay, suppose I'm a masochist and I want pain. And my particular form of masochism is I just want to be hungry. And that's how I'm going to punish myself, is I'm going to avoid eating just so I can have hunger pains. Well, there's something disordered in that approach.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite disordered. And it's going to harm your health. And that's going to be sinful to deliberately harm your health for no good reason just so you can have pain. Well, the flip side of that, I'm going to just eat and eat and eat and eat so I can have pleasure no matter what it does to my health and no matter how bloated I feel or anything like that. I'm just going to eat so I can have this, you know, pleasure in my mouth. Well, there's something disordered there too. And if you do that to the point that you're ultimately hurting yourself, well, then that can be sinful too. So I would say that gluttony can be – and actually classically gluttony can be understood in terms of other forms of excess too. But keeping it just to this, I would say gluttony is a tendency that can lead you to eat in an excessive way. One form of excessive eating is eating excessively for pleasure to the point that it hurts you. Now, having said that, I think that we have to be really careful – before we accuse people of gluttony because or of eating too much because of – and this is something I can speak from personal experience. A lot of diet advice and a lot of health advice has been wrong recently. Diet advice in particular, had diet science is still in its infancy, a lot of diet advice has been really wrong. For years, for decades, there has been this – pervasive cultural advice of low-fat, high-carbohydrate diets. And the evidence is coming in now that that actually does things like it feeds a hunger cycle. It makes you hungrier and you eat more.
Mm.
And it can mess with your blood sugar. So your blood sugar goes up and down. And when it goes down, you need to eat more. And so actually that diet advice, it looks like now it's linked. And I'm speaking here in terms of dietary evidence, not in terms of Catholic theology, but in terms of dietary evidence, it looks like that diet advice is tied to the explosion of obesity and diabetes that mm-hmm. we have going on right now. It's not that people are just lazy and eating too much. It's that they've been following diet advice that's guaranteed to make them hungrier and eat more and lead to these problems,
yeah.
even though they're doing it trying to take care of their health. So we have to be very careful when we evaluate, especially both ourselves, but other people as well. We need to be charitable here because a lot of people are working with bad data. And so if you see someone who's obese, the thing you should do is not say, oh, this person obviously doesn't care about their health. In actuality, having been obese myself, I can tell you the majority of obese people care about it deeply and would do anything to lose weight. They just don't know how because they've been given bad advice and they tried to follow bad advice. It hasn't worked. And either they're still trying to follow it or they've just given up because they tried it and it didn't work. But they would do anything to lose the weight. So I say be charitable when you're thinking about gluttony, about other people, or about yourself, and just recognize that the issue is more complex and we're living at a moment historically where a lot of bad advice is out there and that has messed a lot of people up.
Tyler, I'm going to leave it there because we're getting near the top of the hour and I would like to get as many calls in as I can. Thank you very much for that call, Tyler. We go now to Kyle in Kansas City, Kansas. Kyle, your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hi there. Can you all hear me?
We can.
Hi, fantastic. So my question is, I know the Catholic Church has a precept for you. You know, you attend Mass every week on, you know, the Saturday evening or Sunday, and that's, you know, it's expected. But if you have a two-parter, the first one, is it just venial or mortal if you do miss and it's not something like there's illness or some sort of an emergency? And the second part of that is, and I'm a convert myself, actually, so when I go home for Holy Week, it's mostly, you know, Protestant family, of course, and for the Easter Vigil, you know, the local parish has it right at midnight, and most of the family is going to be, you know, in their 60s, 70s, 80s. They're definitely not going to, you know, want to be out that late. And, of course, I'm traveling all Sunday. So it's not exactly looking like I'm going to be able to make it to either one of those. Now, is that, like, what does the church say as far as the, you know, what to do in a situation like that?
All right, Kyle.
So to deliberately miss Mass without a valid excuse is ordinarily understood to be a mortal sin if you do it with full knowledge and you just deliberately say, I don't care. Mm-hmm. God wants me to be there. I don't care. Well, okay, that's a pretty serious attitude. However, the church is very understanding of various excusing factors. Illness is one, both so you can take care of yourself and so you can stay home and keep your germs to yourself and not infect other people who may be elderly and have challenged immune systems in church. Needing to care for kids is another one. If, let's say, you have a sick kid and you need to stay home and take care of the kid. Travel is another one that can excuse from the obligation to go. Now, one option that may be available for you is an earlier Mass that occurs on the evening of Holy Saturday, but not at midnight. So that's a possibility. Also, you might be able to find something early or late on Sunday. If you absolutely can't, then you're excused. You don't have an obligation. If it's a kind of borderline situation where you're not sure, you know, maybe I could make it, but it would be real hard and I'm not sure, then what you can do is go to your pastor and explain the situation and ask for a dispensation, because your own pastor, by canon law, has the authority to dispense you from going to Mass on a particular occasion, even if you don't have an ironclad excuse. If you had the ironclad excuse, you wouldn't need the dispensation. So he can dispense you. In some dioceses, any priest, I understand, has been given the ability to do that. So if it's a situation where it's kind of borderline, you're not sure about whether it would be possible or not, and you just want to cover your bases, check it out with your pastor or another local priest and see if you can get a dispensation on that day.
Okay, Kyle.
All right. Perfect. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for that call. Well, Jimmy, we come to the end of another...
I'm so glad we had this time together. Just to have a laugh and sing a song.
I didn't know the rest of the words. Yeah. That's a... Wait.
Carol Burnett.
I was getting that confused with Bob Hope's, which was Thanks for the Memories, right?
Oh, Bob, I don't Bob know. Hope's. It was Johnny Carson who swung the golf club, imaginary golf air club.
I'm glad we can have these conversations.
Yeah.
A Daily Defense, 365 Days, plus one to becoming a better apologist. It's a very fine book. Jimmy wrote it. You should get it. You can get it at shop.catholic.com. Tomorrow we have two very fine priests on with us. We have Father Mike Schmitz will be here to talk about God's love, and especially in the sexual context, how that's lived out. And then we have our own chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, and we'll be doing all of that from the Religious Ed Conference in Los Angeles tomorrow. Come by sometime between 3 and 5 if you're there. We'll see you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.